Barrett Salee, welcome into the game in Tuscaloosa. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a Tennessee hate week here in Tuscaloosa, as you can imagine. I'm sure it is in Knoxville as well. It's an Alabama hate week up there.
Yeah, and a little bit of a different tenor this week with Lane Kiffin making his turn. This is one that I think a lot of people circled on the calendar when Lane Kiffin was hired by Alabama back in January. And here it is, and you know, honestly, I think the build-up this week has been, I think, a less hectic and less chaotic as than I thought it would. I think maybe cooler heads are prevailing, and I say that now.
Yeah, in the SEC, come on, Barrett. I mean, you got to be kidding in the Southeastern Conference. But I want to go back to Alabama, Texas A&M, and then we're going to move forward, and we'll talk about this week's games. But your thoughts, analysis of Alabama and Texas A&M this past Saturday?
Well, I think too many people are focusing on how good Alabama's offense was, because if it wasn't that good against Texas A&M defense, then something was terribly wrong. And not enough people are focusing on how great Alabama's defense was, because, and we talked about this in the past, you know, Alabama's defense gets knocked for not succeeding against tempo coaches and against dual-threat quarterbacks. And I'm of the belief that it's the dual-threat quarterback aspect that is more detrimental and more harmful to Alabama than it is the tempo, even though most people focus on the tempo. And I think you saw that against Texas A&M, because they could handle the tempo. And Kenny Hill is not, you know, he is a dual-threat quarterback, but they're not acting like a dual-threat quarterback. He's not having plays called for him like Nick Marshall is at Auburn and some of these other guys. So I thought Alabama's defense handled the tempo well. They rattled A&M and rattled Kenny Hill, and they never stood a chance. It was just a tremendous performance from an Alabama front seven that's just getting better and better, and a tremendous performance from a defensive backfield at Alabama that really rose to the occasion, because I'll be honest, you really can't cover those receivers at Texas A&M. Alabama can't really do it. Nobody can really do it. Mismatch-wise, they create mismatches everywhere. You have to beat them with scheme, and Alabama did that.
And I opened up talking about the stat, and I know it's been mentioned quite a bit, but Tennessee giving up 30 sacks in the first part of the season, that ranks them dead last in the Southeastern Conference in protecting the quarterback, and also 125 out of 128. You just talked about that defensive front getting better, and I will tell you that every day at practice, for one, it's been energized, but you can tell the defensive guys are working on getting to the quarterback. Some of those pass rush drills, I think that's their plan going into Tennessee, and it should be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Justin Worley's been running for his life, and to his credit, he's actually been okay on the run. He wasn't really last week against Ole Miss, but Ole Miss's defense is just filthy. And then now he's got to come back and face Alabama back-to-back after facing Ole Miss, which, I mean, same verse, you know, different verse, same as the first. I mean, he's going to be running for his life. He's going to have to make throws on the run. You know, it is helpful that, you know, he's seen, you know, a ferocious pass rush like this before, and he's playing in Neyland Stadium, and all that stuff will certainly help, but I don't know how much it'll help, because Alabama's front seven is just so much better than Tennessee's offensive line, you know, is just in shambles right now. And you know, they're getting Jacob Gilliam back, who was their best offensive lineman before he tore his ACL. But he tore his ACL in September, and he's coming back in late October. That just, to me, is, you know, that's really brave, A, but also indicative of where that offensive line is right now.
You were one of the guys that I remember talking about last week when we were talking about Alabama, Texas A&M, and I thought your analysis of Texas A&M and sort of maybe the calm-down effect that you gave us last Wednesday talking about Alabama going into the Aggies game. Let me talk about Tennessee for a couple of minutes, because I'd like to get your predictions, your analysis. But if Tennessee can win this football game, why?
I really can't think of a good reason.
Okay. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I'm trying to find the strength for Tennessee if they're going to win this game. And
they can't run the football. They can't pass protect. You know, okay, I'll give you one reason. They have a pretty good front seven. I would say pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. If Alabama's offensive line communication problems come back like we've seen in on road games already this year, then maybe Blake Sims gets rattled, or maybe they, you know, get a deflected pass or a tipped pass or a fumble or a scoop and score or something like that. If Alabama's offensive line communication issues come back, that's how Tennessee can win this game. That's That's the only way, and it's a long shot, but that it's not a no shot. We'll put it that way.
You wrote about this also today, and you look at some of the threats or some of the fans, and I've been a part of this. I mean, as far as in Tuscaloosa, not this year, but in different years, there's Philip Fulmer's return to Hoover, the Winfrey Hotel. I mean, yeah. I remember those threats and having to watch Philip Fulmer talk on a phone. That was the videotape that we had. I mean, that was what it was. That's the way he made his presentation. So sometimes. Yeah, sometimes fans really don't a lot of carry things through. They like to talk. But let's go into this a little bit, because there is a lot of hate coming out of that state. Should there be?
I mean, for Lane Kiffin, yeah, because he's a big reason why Tennessee's been in the dumps for 3 or 4 years. As much as there is, it's probably exaggerated a little bit, but there's no reason for them to like him. I mean, he's really given them no reason for them to like him. And really, the recruiting class he had, and the way it fell apart, and the way he left the program sort of high and dry. Hate's a strong word, but it's a relative term in the world of college football. So yeah, I mean, it's warranted to a point. To a point of physical violence, no. To a point of threatening him and his family, no. But I don't think anybody should like him at Tennessee, because he's a big reason why the program has been where it's been for the last 3-4 years. With that said, Nick Saban shouldn't be in the position of defending his offensive coordinator against stupid questions from guys like us asking about how Lane Kiffin's handling things, because it shouldn't ever go to a point where, we're talking about something seriously or even marginally bad happening to another person. That's not where we need to be.
It's over the top. It's over the top. And I guess that's my point is, and part of me says, okay, this is just fans talk. But sometimes fans can go, extreme. I mean, it's not just in college football. It's in baseball. It's in the NFL. I mean, it sometimes can, the word fanatic can go over the top. That's what one of those parts of that fear that you have for Lane Kiffin returning to Neyland Stadium.
Oh, sure. I mean, you talk about fanatic. I mean, Harvey Updike there, remember the two guys that that charged the first base coach in Chicago about 10 years ago and tried to fight him, and the father and the son? I mean, that stuff, unfortunately, it happened, and I don't think. I mean, I would like to think that nothing like that would be legitimately happen, and I would imagine that, while Nick Saban can sit there and say that he hasn't really talked about it with Lane, of course he talked about it. I mean, come on, of course he talked about it, and I'm sure Lane and his family know what's coming, and I'm sure they're taking proper precautions. So when Lane does go out on the field, there will be extra security guards there. I mean, at every field, there's a wall of security guards there every single game. There may be a wall of security guards around Lane when he's walking on and off the field. And honestly, I'm okay with that. If he feels he needs that, go do it. I mean, that's fine. But the idea that he may have to coach from the press box because of physical, I mean, come on, that's way over the top and really unnecessary.
Well, not when you got some big, nasty offensive lineman, a defensive lineman protecting you. I don't know if there's a lot of fans that would like to challenge some of those guys on either side of the football. Most of us that sat in the stands probably couldn't challenge a 6'7", 325, 600, any of those big guys. So that may get the team a little bit fired up, because I'm sure they're looking for some energy as they travel into this game. Third Saturday in October, does it mean the same as what it did 10 years ago as far as one of the old Southern rivalries?
No, because of Tennessee. And really even before that, I mean, even when Tennessee was good, Alabama wasn't. That was like the middle and the end of the Shula era. So, for like the past decade, one of the teams has been sort of fledgling. And, I think that's taken away a little bit from it. And really for the last 3-4 years, I guess since the Lane Kiffin game in 2009, it's been just a ridiculously awful, uncompetitive, almost unwatchable football game. I think some of it's taken away. I think this rivalry, and the same thing goes with Auburn, Georgia, since they're cross-divisional rivalries, they mean the most when both teams are in the fight for the division. Because, this one taking place in late October now, and then Auburn, Georgia, mid-November, those are some of the last few games you have against conference opponents for those teams, and they mean something. And so I think it's better when those games mean the most to both teams, not just one or the other. I mean, the 2009 Auburn or Alabama-Tennessee game, you know, when Terrence Cody blocked the field goal, that to me was a good game, but it really didn't mean an awful lot for Tennessee. You know, it was a great game for Alabama, but it was more a case of Alabama surviving a scare rather than surviving and winning a heavyweight bout. I think that game's at its best, and the rivalry is at its best when it's a heavyweight bout and it means the same or close to the same for both programs.
Final question. Ole Miss travels to Baton Rouge. Do the Tigers have a chance?
I don't think so, but apparently I'm not in Vegas, because Vegas seems to, because LSU's only a 3-point underdog, which I can't really figure out why.
That's crazy. That's a crazy number.
I'm not going to be able to explain it, because I honestly could not sell you this, but I'm going to try to sell it to you. How about this? Death Valley at night is still a scary place, especially for a team that can't really block and a quarterback that's still known for being inconsistent. That's one factor. And two, I think LSU's weak spot on defense is the interior of that defensive line, and especially their run defense. Well, Ole Miss can't really exploit that because they can't run on anybody. So I think what people are looking at and what the oddsmakers are looking at are saying, you know what? Yeah, LSU's sort of a train wreck right now. They're not that great. They're okay at best. But Ole Miss can't really exploit what other teams like Mississippi State and like Auburn have exploited. So maybe they're struggling, going to struggle a little bit. Maybe that puts the game in Bo Wallace's hands. Maybe that puts the game in Bo Wallace's hands against the best pass defense in the SEC, and maybe LSU gets lucky. That's the only thing I can figure. It's not a great explanation, and I don't believe myself when I say it, but that's about all I got.